Okay, I'm here with Mauro Guillen. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really well, Paul. Thank you for having me here.
Well, those are two names. I said them all together. So your first name is,
Mauro
and your last name is.
Yang.
See, I felt that he would say it much better than me because, in essence, he's from Spain.
I am.
And that's a beautiful country.
Thank you. Have you been?
I have been. I've seen the joy of your country, and I've even been to the Grand Canary Islands.
Oh, good.
So you're beautiful. In fact, you know, today on today's, you know, when you open up the computer, I don't know, I'm on a PC, but Microsoft, if you have Word, opens up with a picture, and today's picture is a picture from Spain, where it's a town on the border of France, I believe, and there's like these mountains behind it, and it's gorgeous beyond gorgeous, and it's called Aguero, Aguero, Spain.
Yeah, I think that's on the Atlantic coast.
Oh, okay. I might have mixed it up. I
No. It is I think it's close to the French border, yeah.
yeah. Tucked away in the rural province bordering France is a village below some very big boulders. Wow,
Yep.
what a gorgeous Madrid's the Segovia's the it just doesn't end over there. Why? What are you doing here in Pennsylvania? What are you, nuts? No, I'm just
I came here a long time ago, and then I married and I had children and I stayed.
This gentleman's actually an illustriously well-known professor at the Wharton School, one of the most famous ones at the University of Pennsylvania. Just say that word and you look smarter. also has a bunch of awards and written a lot of papers, has a very successful 100,000 person group, likes to listen to his thinking about what's going on in the world. Were you an inquisitive child?
I was not. I was very introverted. And so I guess I, managed to survive. But by the time I became a teenager, I was so much more extroverted by then.
And then what interested you about this place? See, this place comes in two different sizes. I just want to show you. You got this place, right? This is Hug a Planet. My buddy makes these. I see, I do the World Peace Day concerts. And so I'm very much into the world and the peace. And I always hold this guy up too. See, because this guy, this is from the moon. And this is the blue marble. And you see no boundaries. And since you did even some stuff on bigotry, there's no boundaries, there's no borders. It's just us people, no colors, no religion. To it's what well, John Lennon is on this card. So tell me a little bit about your background and what you enjoy doing.
Well, I'm an academic, of course, so that's what I do in order to make a living. And therefore, of course, I enjoy very much thinking about big questions, reading about what other people have said about those questions, and in general, trying to, go out, talk to people, gather data, and try to figure out for myself what the answer is to some of those questions, right? But in addition to that, personally, what I love doing is I like to travel. And needless to say, I'm very unhappy right now because I've been grounded here in Philadelphia for the last 7 months. I haven't traveled at all. And I like to, as I think you also do, I like to be in touch with other cultures. I like to put myself in the shoes of other people who live in other parts of the world and look at the world from their perspective. I enjoy very much doing that.
I do too. We've actually, when I started my own company after CBS and PBS background, making TV shows, I started a multicultural marketing and advertising company. So for 35 years, I've been doing multicultural, working with all the ethnic communities. So, the Polish down in Philadelphia, or the Chinese in Philadelphia, or the Spanish. But as long as I can get like a Philly cheesesteak. then I'm kind of happy.
You know what I've done during this pandemic? I like riding my bike. So since I cannot travel, I'm biking around different Philadelphia neighborhoods, which, as you know, many of them are very ethnically based.
Sure.
So you have the Italian area or the old Italian area, which now is both Hispanic and Vietnamese, by the way. Uh-huh. You have Russian areas. You have so many, you know, different ethnic backgrounds and neighborhoods in Philadelphia. So it's kind of a microcosm of the world. And so I'm biking, you know, every afternoon I try to bike around the city and I look at the stores, I look at people, and then I come back home.
Well, you're like Rocky, you know, if you climb the stairs there at wherever that building, what's the name of that building?
The museum. I've only done that once.
All right. And then did you get up there and go like this?
Yeah. But remember the important thing about Rocky. Rocky is the metaphor for the underdog, right?
Yes, of course.
So it's the, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you hit, but rather how hard you can get hit and keep going, which I think is a good metaphor for the world right now, meaning that we need to be resilient.
I love that comment. That's brilliant. And I'm totally in favor of that mindset. That's, you know, well, the little kids, they fall down and that's how they learn how to ski, right? Mm-hmm. But they're already close to the ground.
Well, the advantage that they have is that they do learn how to ski, whereas if somebody like you or I tries to ski for the first time, after the first fall, which will happen instantaneously, we just give up.
Because there's more to fall, you know, so we're a little more concerned. When they're that little and there's nothing brittle, there's nothing brittle, they're like mush and so on and so forth. So, you know, since the worldly, you know, you like this worldly mindset, and I'm a one world guy, actually. Milestone Company is called One World Business. Can we get along worldly? Is it, first of all, do you think we are already, and I just did a story on the Peace Index about how peaceful this world actually is, more so than other times in this, in humanity. Do you think we're actually at a more peaceful time in humanity than we have been in the past?
Well, look, I think there's always tensions and there's always divisions in the world. But it seems to me that sometimes those divisions and those tensions just come to the surface and they become, you know, so prominent. And I think we're living through one of those periods right now. But if you ask me about the world as a whole, I think we have one very important deficit right now, which is that I don't think different countries are talking to one another anymore. I think they're all going their own way, trying to, you know, jockey for position, for advantage. And we seem to have very little collaboration. And I think it's a pity because at the end of the day, we're all on the same boat, so to speak, right? Yeah. And there are, not every problem is global. So there's a lot of, you know, things that can be accomplished at the local level. I think that's really important to keep in mind. But there are a few problems that are global in scope. And therefore, I think it would be wise for, you know, the leaders of the different countries in the world to every now and then sit at the table or at least do a Zoom call, right? Like we're doing right now.
Well, we're involved. The United Nations International Day of Peace is the one that I'm involved with. I'm not an NGO. I'm not associated more than a private citizen wanting to strengthen another one of their good messages, which is this world peace outreach, which has actually been around since 1984. So, you know, I'm fully in favor of what you have to say. You know, I'm a believer of we have more food than we know what to do with, to the point that we hide it into and sometimes we even toss it. In this world, and then though there's this child who can't get a glass of water or you know, a piece of corn. So, you know, for me, it's a mismanaged planet. And being a marketing major and then going to the university and master's in communications or whatever, interfaith minister, all faith, blah, blah, blah. It's just a bad marketing job. We just don't have our world together because we don't have I mean, let it be anyone. Let it have been Gandhi. Let it be Mother Teresa. Let it be somebody that's a lover of humanity. What do you think? Can we find that person?
Oh, look, I agree with you. I mean, let me use the example that you just raised about how much we waste as a way to answer your question. And I do believe that the problem of waste in the world is a moral issue, right?
Yes.
So how come that we in some parts of the world feel entitled to, because we're rich, right? Or relatively rich, which we are, right? At the end of the day, compared to many other people in the world. How come that we feel entitled to use the resources as if they are going to be there forever, right? And you mentioned food. And look, I mean, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that we waste about 30% of the food that reaches the end consumer here in the United States. So you're saying, yes, we produce more than enough food, but then the distribution of that food is so unequal that we have people going hungry in the U.S. We have people, even more so, more of them going hungry in other parts of the world. So I think that's a moral issue. I think we should be thinking very carefully, since we are human beings and we have not just you know, a pair of hands and the ability to perceive the world, but we also have, or at least I'm hoping that we all have, a moral compass of some sort. So we need to think very carefully as to how come that we're wasting so much food. And food is just one example. We waste so many other things. But at the same time, we know that some of our fellow human beings are not having a good time, right? They're actually, you know, living through misery. So I think it's a very important question that we need to ask ourselves.
Yes, well, I agree. You know, I was married to a European woman, and, you know, she said we were born with silver spoons in our mouth. Most of us here in America, America is sort of a list of world unto itself, you know, to a certain degree. You know, if we get really technical, five times the amount of...
They tell me Brooklyn is a world unto itself. I mean, not even America,
Brooklyn?
Right?
Well, Brooklyn, I know, I'm not from Brooklyn, but my dad was a Williamsburg boy and my wife, I married a Brooklyn girl, but I have Brooklyn in my soul for 55, 60 years. In either case, yeah, well, Brooklyn is a world of itself, and actually it gets along in many, many due respects. I'm a country boy from Tarrytown. So, you know, the city scenario is that it's like Times Square, you know, one Times Square where the ball drops, where we have our World Peace Day, where I did Woodstock, the concert, the 20th anniversary. You know, that is the crossroads a little bit of the world. And I always say that to a certain degree, America has that ability of people getting along with each other from so many different ethnicities and so on and so forth. But I think, getting back to your commentary, I think the priorities are just messed up. The priorities of our fear for survival puts our mindset into bang, bang, shoot 'em ups, missiles, you know, and it's out of balance to what's really, you know, today. And now we want to fly to the moon. And to Mars, what are we going to do? We're going to make Mars ice cream cones? So I don't know. There seems to be priorities of life or non-life.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think establishing priorities is not just a question about individual choice, right?
Right.
It's also, I want to go back to moral issues. It's a moral issue, right? I mean, how do we prioritize the way in which we spend our time, the way in which we allocate our efforts, perhaps helping ourselves, but also helping our families or our communities, or the nation as a whole. So I think it is an important issue to prioritize well. And I would tend to agree with you that on many levels, we seem to be getting some, you know, of those priorities wrong.
Well, how do we go? So now, based upon actually us thinking similarly, I will say, but our desire is worldly, I feel, also similarly, caring about the big picture, the big place, the whole joint. You know, my brother is in Barcelona. So, you know, and in a small village in Africa, without a cup of water. You know, why, you know, it's just a mind-boggling for me. How we are so messed up?
Well, you know, I mean, some historians would tell you that, you know, when we were all hunter-gatherers, it was easier. You know, it was a very egalitarian kind of society, right? Except for, of course, the fact that some hunters and some gatherers were in better physical shape and they could, you know, be better at being hunters and gatherers than the rest. But I think once we started having big groupings of people, big societies and big cities and all of that, I think, you know, a different dynamic started to take place. And it's one that, unless you keep an eye on it, I think it generates a lot of inequality. And then, of course, you have the other problem, which is that some of those groups of people would have, for whatever reason, better leaders than others. And I do believe that in particular political leadership, but community leadership in general, makes a big difference. And so, you know, you could have a situation in which just because of the bad decisions or the selfish decisions by a few leaders, you know, the entire population suffers, right? I mean, leaders can have a disproportionate impact on what happens. And I think here in the United States, we are quite lucky in the sense that over the years, over the centuries, we've put in place a system that seems to be resilient, right, to a lot of issues like wars and a crisis of every kind you can imagine. But other parts of the world are not as lucky as we are. They don't have as much stability as we have, right? Even now that people feel that we're very divided and we're very polarized, that's true, I guess. But at the same time, we enjoy a measure of stability that not that many countries in the world can say that they enjoy.
Right, right. And people do notice that and discuss that. I sort of, you know, for me, I actually don't think much has changed since man has been there. There always seemed to me, talking about the leaderships, there's always been a bully. And at least a bully who would scare people. And either you joined a bully or you got popped on the head, you know, from the caveman time. Mm-hmm. And this is somehow we haven't, when it shows its ugly head in certain places, and if that bully is in the position of, has been backed by the people, we're in problems. Any country then has some problems. Would you say that that's accurate or not?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I think, you know, each of us is born into a family, into a community, into a country. And I don't think, you know, we realize the extent to which how much we can achieve in life and the opportunities that, you know, we can enjoy in life are dependent, how much of it is dependent on where we are born in the world and when we are born. Now, I'm not denying that then individual choices matter and that whether you have a nurturing family or not matter. But you see, for example, I think of myself as, you know, in the context of the other 7.6 billion people that we have in the planet, I feel that myself that I've been extremely lucky. Because I was born, you know, in a country that didn't have a war, in a country that was not chaotic. I was born into a family that was stable, you know, with both of my parents living until I was, an adult. And that I had access to the single most important thing, which is education and then work opportunities. So, you know, if I complain about something, and I do complain every now and then, some days I just, you know, feel miserable about everything. You know, I need to remind myself that I've been extremely lucky because, you know, in the context of, again, a human population of 7.6 billion people, I'm certainly one of the most privileged, among the most privileged of them, right?
I'm on the same page. You know, I'm one lucky ducky. I had the same thing. Mother was a librarian, you know, with great parents all through it, good family. I mean, I had it, I made it in the shade, I'll say.
Yeah, yeah. But again, I mean, within maybe a couple of miles from my home here in Philadelphia, which is where I am now, there's a lot of people who haven't been as lucky as I have, right?
And
needless to say, if I were to travel, if I could now, in the midst of this pandemic, for 5,000 miles, I would come across millions and millions of people who have been relatively unlucky, right?
You know, third world countries. I always wonder in these third world countries, let's just ask you your thinking on this, okay? You know, I don't know if I would, because the roots of a home and a family and ancestors is very strong. But if you're on an island and you know the water is raising its level, why stay in the island? If you're in a culture that can't get a glass of water and it's so miserable, I guess you stay there because you can't go anywhere else. I mean, I'm a guy who says, you know how much land we have in America? You know how much, I mean, we could put the whole world in America. If you want to really build an economy, put everybody here. We only have to send it about 26 feet and you can give it to another 3 million people, something. I don't know, you know, people think I'm nuts, but I just wonder, you know, some people are blessed with a nicer environment to grow a piece of corn. What do you think? Is if you were running the world, what would be some of the things you would consider? Do you have? Are we talking too long? You okay here?
No, I'm fine. No, I was just making sure that my volume was okay because there's some background noise here. So I was looking down my computer. Oh. Look, let me use the example of water that you just pointed out. So there are people in some parts of the world that spend 2 or 3 hours a day on average procuring the water that they need. They don't have any running water at home, so they have to walk miles to get water. And we use water for everything. We use water for cleaning. We use water for washing ourselves. We use water for cooking. And of course, also for drinking, right? And just imagine if instead of being able to open your faucet and have as much water as you know at a relatively very, very low cost, right? If you had to spend 2 or 3 hours per day securing that water, right? I mean, it's just mind-boggling, right?
Well, let me ask you I'm sort of jump a little ahead, only because we do the show, The Water Hour. We help create the United Nations International Day of Water. So water just so happens to be a subject matter that I'm extremely familiar with. And I'm on the New York Friends of Clearwater. Pete Seeger is my buddy. So all these kind of things, you know, the water thing. I want to know from you, because you're a smart man, if you were running Mother Earth, Do you think somebody could run Mother Earth? Do you think we could ever come to a day that we could have a world government, or is our United Nations our best bet so far?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a realist. So far, most of our conversation has been very idealistic in nature, right?
Yes.
But if you're asking me to not just think about the world, but also, you know, to roll up my sleeves and then think about what is it that we can do to address some of these problems, then I instantaneously become more of a realist rather than idealist. And just to answer your question more specifically, I do believe that it makes sense to have nation states in the world. So we have countries, right? And then each of these countries defines who's a citizen and who's not. And then they do whatever they can to protect the interests and to advance the standard of living of that population. But of course, if we just have that in the world, if we just have nation states, then we can get into a lot of trouble. And of course, we have wars in the world and we have all sorts of conflicts that I think stem from the fact that we have this basic unit of political organization, which is nation states, right? Or countries. So that's why I'm a big globalist in the sense that I think we need global governance. I think we need, as many possible institutions or as many possible ways in which countries can come together and they can at least talk about their problems and their differences. And in so doing, I think there's a better chance that they will find common ground. I mean, that's the way in which I think. So I'm very idealistic, but at the same time, I'm realistic, and I think nation states are necessary. But boy, if we only have nation states, then we're doomed. We also need international collaboration, and we need international governance.
Do you think, and I'm a media guy who cares about important subjects like we're talking about, and so, and I like to utilize this media thing, which is very powerful of unto itself, to get to these kinds of important discussions. So do you think that this little guy, I mean, we got a computer in front of our face right now, but do you think this little guy, this is doing better than the computer? All right, we got more of these little guys around in the world than anything else. Do you think this little guy with the right people, have the right message, can get to the right ears so he can really make some substantial worldwide changes? That technology.
Yeah, I also have my own, right?
Yes, I'm sure.
I have my own over here.
I'm sure.
Look, I think this small device has changed everything. Because, connectivity, 24/7 connectivity is just that changes, our entire behavior. You see, people are not just communicating with the phone. I mean, they're doing business. They're learning. They're listening to music. They're getting to know people, right? Because we have now all of these platforms that you can use to meet new people, new friends, and interact with them. So it's changing social relationships. I think it's changing our psychology. And let me give you a factoid, which I find fascinating. You see, there's more people in the world who have access to a phone than, meaning a mobile phone, a cell phone, than people who have access to a toilet, right? I discussed this in my book. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary, right? That our priority seems to be, I really want to be connected or have the ability to be connected. And, that's my number one priority. And having a toilet connected to the sewer is not as important, right, as the other thing. But I believe that, like every, technological wonder, and the smartphone is certainly, the single most important technological wonder of our time, I think, it can be something that brings positive things, but it can also bring very negative things. And so, technology, as wonderful as it might be, depends in its effects in terms of what use we make of it as individuals and also as communities, as countries, right? And, we could speak for hours about some of the negative effects of the phone. For example, what's going on with children, right, that are growing with a phone. It opens up huge opportunities for them, but they also make them a little bit more isolated, right? So this is the paradox, right? So 24/7 connectivity sometimes can make us more lonely, right?
What's the name of the book?
2030. You can see it on the background here, actually.
I know.
So it's all about how, the world is changing right now along many of the dimensions that we've been talking about in our conversation. And quite frankly, I think the single most important thing right now is to realize that things are changing. Because some people are either denying that things are changing or they feel that somehow magically we may be able to go back to where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And I don't think that's possible, right? I think we need to first accept the reality of change, massive change that we're going on, that is going on right now throughout the world. And then secondly, that we need to prepare for that. We cannot wait until everything has changed. I mean, you need to change with the times.
Why 2030?
2030 is 10 years from now. And, as an academic, of course, I spend, as I told you at the beginning, most of my time collecting data, crunching numbers, talking to people, trying to see what other scholars have said about a particular topic. And I noticed about 2 or 3 years ago that by the year 2030, many things are going to be different. If you want, I can give you 3 quick examples. So one of them, in most of East Asia, in Europe, here in the United States, for the first time ever, by the year 2030, we're going to have more grandparents than grandchildren. And think about what that means, right? I mean, that is unusual because, you see, when you and I were growing up, there were so many more grandchildren than grandparents in the world, okay? Because remember, families used to have 5, 6 children here in the United States on average, right? obviously grandparents, if they had five children themselves, and then each of those children had five children, that would be 25. But there's only four grandparents, right? So four compared to 25. But now we have many situations in which those four grandparents, who, by the way, are living much longer than in the past, right? They're living into the 70s, into the 80s on average. Maybe they can enjoy being around with, right now, maybe four or five grandchildren. By the year 2030, fewer than four grandchildren on average. So that's a big change. Another big change is, hey, the U.S. consumer market. When you and I were growing up, it was indisputably the largest in the world. That had already started to change beginning 20 or 30 years ago. But again, by the year 2030, the emerging markets of Asia are going to be bigger than Europe and the United States combined. Just think about that. I mean, Europe and the United States have been calling the shots in the world, so to speak, for the last 500 years, right? Well, in the case of the US, for the last 150 years or so. So we're about to see, Paul, such dramatic changes that we better start adjusting mentally to those changes. Otherwise, we're going to feel very lost in that new world.
Well, hopefully the new world is everyone's world in my idealistic way. And the people from Beijing and the people from Brooklyn, which half of Brooklyn now is from Beijing, we'll be together. And
I hope so. I mean, I'm optimistic.
Borders and boundaries, and won't worry about the colors, the religions, and John Lennon will come back.
Absolutely. I actually quote John Lennon in my book, you know, his song Imagine.
Yeah, that's
which I think is a very uplifting song, right?
Yeah, we use it all the time. It's in my movie also. Yeah, we're into that song.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is the power of music, right? That we sometimes use music to arouse ourselves and to, you know, when we are angry or whatever. But music also, I think, you know, for the most part can be or give us a message of hope, right? And there's certainly certain songs that are that way.
Two last questions. I also think the millennial goals of the United Nations, I believe, were the 2030. I wanted to look it up, but I believe the 17 millennial goal. Well, we had the 30 year, and now they're down to 17. I don't know. The millennial goals, I have something to do with 2030 as well. Let me ask you just one, and this has been a real joy. I appreciate you taking all this time. Best of luck. Where can people get your book?
Oh, anywhere books are sold. So that can be online or it can be at, you know, your listeners' favorite local bookstore. And of course, also, before I forget, Paul, I would encourage your listeners to engage with me. I mean, if they want to continue the conversation beyond this podcast, they can just reach out to me. They can Google me and they will easily find my email. Or my website is www.mauroguillen, my name, first name and last name without a space, .com. They can also find me on social media, on LinkedIn, on Twitter. So I would be extremely happy to continue the conversation.
Good man. He's a great man. This has been a joy. So I asked, though, with regard to the peace, since we're involved with the International Day of Peace, I've asked many people, what is peace for them? If you wouldn't mind, what is peace for you?
Well, look, peace, of course, I think about it in many different ways. For me, the single most important definition is peace of mind. So I would like to continue living on this world, having peace of mind. I would like to pass away thinking, I have peace of mind about what I've done here and what I have accomplished and what I haven't accomplished, right? But maybe you had in mind peace in the sense of, you know, people essentially going about, you know, living their lives in a way that they respect others, right? That's another definition that is very dear to my heart. And you can apply that definition to the problem of war. You can apply that definition to the problem of terrorism. I think you can also apply that concept of peace to the problem of resource access and what you were saying at the beginning, wastefulness, right? So I think maybe the second definition, the more I think about it, I think you're influencing me today in this conversation, is perhaps more important, is how can we go about living our lives in such a way that we do not intrude on other people's opportunities and you know, lives in a way that is negative, right? And again, you can apply this to the problem of violence in your neighborhood. You can apply this to the problem of war in the world. You can apply it to so many issues.
Brilliant. Okay, my friend. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I had a great time.
Me too. Me too. Thank you so much, Paul. It's been a wonderful conversation. And again, I'd like to encourage your listeners to continue it if they wish to do so, just by reaching out to me. Thank you.
Fantastic. I'm going to get on my bike. You get on your bike. I'll meet you in the middle down maybe like Trenton, New Jersey or something.
Okay, terrific. All right, next to the railway station, okay?
Well, we'll switch phone numbers and stay friends and see how we can do more things together. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much.